Misinformation, election stealing, Germany's astonishing military rise, and the vital missing ingredient from German politics. We're going to look at some of the most important trends for the next year in Europe on today's Trumpet World. Fulfilled prophecy. That's probably the best way to describe the Trumpet's most important coverage of 2024. The articles from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry are the most important content we produce. They're the articles that we, as writers and speakers, build our own coverage around. And over the last few years, I've gone back over Mr. Flurry's material at the end of each calendar year. It's a great way to get some really good perspective on what really matters from all of the many, many different news stories that come at us from throughout the year. It reviews what really makes the Trumpet unique. That Bible prophecy that he focuses on in those articles just gives them a focus that you cannot get anywhere else. It's a great way to review the important trends from the last year and how those trends are going to carry forwards into the next year. This year, so much of that revolves around two massive fulfilled prophecies. In the Middle East, with Fright from January, we were having articles from Mr. Flurry on Syria and watch for Syria to break away from Iran. And Donald Trump's return, again, one of his first articles on American politics was about the return of Donald Trump. And we're going to talk about both of those in a future show. But today I want to begin by talking about Europe, and we'll focus on the future because so much of Mr. Flurry's content for Europe focuses on a massive, massive prophecy that is yet to be fulfilled. And to help me go over this coverage, I'm joined today by Joshua Michels.
Hello again.
Now, when we're going into this, I think I was already aware of one massive unfulfilled prophecy that, you know, I knew Mr. Flurry had focused on a lot over the last year. One other thing that stood out that I wasn't really anticipating, but comes through in so many articles, is also a European prophecy that has already been fulfilled. And I think it's one that is almost so big that I don't think about it enough. And that is the rise of Germany, or as he calls it in one of his articles, Germany's astonishing military might. Like, I think for both of us, we've grown up in this world where for all of our adult lives, Germany has been the mover and shaker in Europe, the number one economy, the main decision maker, the top decision maker. And so it's kind of easy for us to take that for granted or even forget that that's a fulfilled prophecy. But in several of these articles, Mr. Flurry went back to Herbert W. Armstrong and what Herbert W. Armstrong was writing, even as Germany lay in ruins, and how audacious those prophecies were, and shows just how dramatic Germany's rise has been.
Yeah, and one of the news this year that picked Mr. Flurry's attention was that Germany became the third largest economy in the world, mainly because Japan has been declining a little bit faster. But that's massive considering what you just said, that Mr. Armstrong was prophesying about the rise of Germany when Germany laid in rubbles, and he was on the scene at the time, and the massive destruction of the carpet bombing of German cities, and then the occupation of military forces, the demilitarization of West and East Germany. In East Germany, the Russians, they just took all the military equipment, all the industrial might they could, to basically leave the Eastern German people in poverty. But in West Germany, they said you should not have a military at all at the time. So just comparing that time from today, and even some 30 years ago when, or 40 years ago by now, when Germany was still divided in 1985, 1986, that's the year when Mr. Armstrong died, Germany was still divided. So for decades, Mr. Armstrong prophesied about Germany's reunification and rise while Germany was still divided. And no one really expected, I even read someone today, it was like the Munich National Security, Munich Security Conference, the chief, he said, like, no one of us expected the fall of the German wall, and yet it happened all of a sudden. And that just shows how suddenly things can change. So that's the scene that we are here in now.
I really appreciated that bigger overview. I mean, he said in that article, Germany's astonishing military rise, that we need to see the bigger picture. And it's true. And he made the point that there are a lot of... Germany's weakness is a big story. Like, rightfully, when we're doing the Week in Review show and as we're doing our other important shows, we are talking about Germany's problems with its gas supplies. And I want to get into some of this more in a future article. Like, the energy prices have risen to absolutely ridiculous extremes within Germany because they've shut down their nuclear power station. Like, there are real problems. But we... And all of this is serving a critical prophetic purpose, and it's leading to a very important destination. But we can't let all this talk about these day-to-day problems distract from this also important big picture. And he said there, failing to consider Germany's past, many people today focus only on its current struggles. Instead of seeing its military capability, they see military weakness. Instead of an economic powerhouse, they see a struggling economy. Instead of its global ambition, they see the nation's self-absorption and division. Instead of recognizing a revival of the nation most responsible for World War II, they see a repentant, peace-loving people. And he talks about, well, yeah, in truth, there are a bunch of issues. But he says, well, we have to see the bigger picture. We must acknowledge these unmistakable realities. Clearly, Germany has overcome its post-war defeat. Within the European Union, it is unmistakably the dominant power, and its military ambition is no longer being restrained. It is being encouraged. These facts are simply extraordinary. And he's right. There are extraordinary facts. And again, it's just, I think we're just used to them being facts. If you are our generation, those are the facts of life that you've always grown up with. And so, yes, okay, Germany's economy is struggling, but they're still the world's number three economy.
Yeah, and I think that goes hand in hand. Those troubles, they're also very much prophetic because they're changing the German people themselves. And Mr. Fluey has another article where he talks about the revival of German militarism. So those problems, they're really driving Germany into a different direction. And another thing that stood out to me in Mr. Fluey's articles was how often he pointed out that the German people, they are a great people. They have accomplished a lot of things. I like to hear things like that, of course, being German myself. But then if troubles come, if crises come, a great economy can be quickly changed into a war economy. So all those crises that we are seeing at the same time, they seem for some to be a distraction of Germany's actual strength. At the same time, though, they are driving Germany into a different direction. Times before Adolf Hitler, the car industry was made to support the war, essentially. Now the car industry is struggling today, and the arms industry is going well. You're going to supply some armory pretty soon.
I mean, I think America is the ultimate in World War II is another example of that, where I think it was 1939, America's military was smaller than Bulgaria. I think from memory, it was something like the 17th largest military in the world. But you start getting all of those factories that are producing cars and start making tanks and planes. And by the end of the war, they were replacing in 2 days everything that they lost at Pearl Harbor. Like, there is a lot of potential there. And then that's another thing that comes across from Mr. Fleury's articles is this focus on how you're seeing some of that potential already start to be directed into military aims. So Europe is undertaking a massive arming spree was another article that Mr. Fleury wrote this year. Just you start to put together some of the statistics. And it wasn't when I first started in the news bureau, it was every year European militaries were cutting their budget. And it was we were like, oh, this is big news. Germany didn't cut their budget this year, their military this year. That's a big turnaround. This is an important change. And it was. You go from just taking it for granted, you can keep shrinking your military to, okay, well, we need to at least stay the same. But now everyone is increasing their military. And then he focused as well on one of the massive success stories of the last couple of years in terms of German industry, and that is Rheinmetall. And he has that article, Rising from the Underground, that largely focuses on this company that, what was it, their share price? I don't have the stat in front of me. I think it's tripled or quadrupled since the war in Ukraine.
It's sixfold by now.
Sixfold. Due to the war in Ukraine. That's a massive turnaround. huge amounts of ammunition. They're building factories all over the place. They've got a backlog of $65 billion worth of orders that they're expecting to have that by the end of the year. And then Mr. Flurry brings in what you could turn to your business papers and you could read that about Rheinmetall, and you could get something probably more up to date even from this month about, you know, maybe you could read an article about Nvidia and how they're dominating their tech things, and then Rheinmetall and how well they're doing. What Mr. Flurry brings in is critical history. And the way that you had a bunch of German companies after World War II meeting with Nazis and agreeing, well, we're going to put ourselves at the disposal of resurrecting this Nazi empire, and we are going to kind of go underground and do some long-term planning and lay the groundwork to build everything back up again. And Rheinmetall was an important member of that meeting. So when you see Rheinmetall exploding in this way, well, there's a massive warning there.
Yeah, and that's something I tried to search that one day, and I couldn't find any articles from the last decade that even mentioned that meeting. But Rheinmetall itself, it calls its tanks like Panther, throwing back to the World War II history. And if you look on their website, it talks about, yeah, between the wars, we had to kind of lay low. And then we worked together with Russia to test our weaponry. And then it kind of skips the World War II section. And then like, okay, after World War II, we still had to be like, oh, we were not allowed to be manufacturing weapons. So we had to go into a different industry. So the history is alive. And they are tracing it themselves back to that long century-old history. But people do not consider, could it be that this company is again going to fuel another war? And that, another thing about that company in Mr. Flory's other article, Europe is undertaking a massive arming spree, is that if you look at one company by itself or one European country by itself, compared to the American counterpart, they don't look that big. Now, Rheinmetall is rising, and it's one of the top militaries in the world, but it has German competitors that are almost doing the same thing, and they're fighting over contracts. There are many more European companies. I think it's six times as many arms system in the European Union, or 15 times, I forgot, as the American counterpart. So the United States is united in their military arms manufacturing, where Europe is much more divided, specializing in different things. So they're still small, but once they're joining forces, that's when we see the massive uprising.
And I think it's interesting, like Rheinmetall, Mr. Flurry is really focusing on this back in, was it March or April that came out? I mean, they've kind of hit the news recently where some investigative journalists have dug in and found, well, they, quite a few years ago, they bought a South African arms company, and they used the fact that they own the South African arms companies to get around Germany's export laws. And they have this South African arms company go around and sign, which they completely own. And they go around and they sign deals and they do contracts. And all of these deals, many of them, if they were known in Germany, a government probably wouldn't sign off on them because they know it would be unpopular with the German people. But this way they can get around them. The German government doesn't have to sign off on those deals. And it's a way, like the same company that was sitting down with the Nazis is actively working on getting around current German law and current export restrictions and current things so that German companies don't once again arm evil regimes. They're finding ways to get around that. That should be sounding alarm bells. And Mr. Flurry makes the point in one of these that if people just knew their history more, or I think people know of World War II, were just more aware of that history, thought about it more, gave it more importance, there are warnings there about many of these things. And then Bible prophecy adds in those other warnings. And that's why, and that's how Herbert W. Armstrong made these forecasts in 1945. He quotes that May 9th, 1945, one day after Germany's surrender. Mr. Armstrong said, "We don't understand German thoroughness. From the very start of World War II, they have considered and carefully, methodically planned in such an eventuality the third round, World War III. This round of war in Europe is over, and the Nazis have now gone underground." And then a bit further on, he said, "They plan to come back again on the third try." And this is all based on Revelation 17, and which says that this European military power that has dominated Europe so much, it would go underground. and it would come back again. And it didn't happen at quite the same pace that Mr. Armstrong thought it would, but you look at the way that Germany is now dominating Europe once again. Clearly, you seeing this beast, as it's called in Revelation 17, rising from the underground.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the most controversial things, is to prove, is Germany actually planning another world war? Now, many of the people in Germany are not planning another world war, but from that prophecy we know specifically that there has been a Nazi underground, which has later then, through that 1996 declassified US document, been proven that there were plans for a Nazi underground, just like Revelation 17 has described. And then at the time, someone, a Jewish leader, asked, now is that plan being worked out? And now we are seeing more and more evidence that that plan is being worked out. The example that you mentioned earlier with South Africa, the 1944 document said specifically that those companies need to go overseas, abroad, to do their dealings, because they would not be allowed to do it in Germany. And then they should be able to finance the Nazi uprising again. So it was all planned, and Rheinmetall and those other companies, they have all those overseas stations, and they are operating much more secretively, not just for economic gains, but all for a specific strategy, just as it was outlined. So if you compare the plan with today, which Mr. Fluey does in that article, you see the plan being worked out. And that's the key to seeing that prophecy being fulfilled that revealed that plan thousands of years before that.
And you think about over the last 15 years or so, the number of pieces of news that we've had out of Germany about how many Nazis after the war worked in this government department and this government department. And initially, after World War II, so many of these government departments, the people working in them said, you know, like, oh, no, we weren't Nazi supporters. We didn't even like the Nazis. In fact, we tried to kind of throw sand in the wheels, put spanners in the works. We tried to slow everything down. Then all of these reports have exposed those as lies, and these people that claimed to not really support the Nazis were actually quite ardent Nazis, and it's so many of Germany's post-war judges and finance department, all of these people, it was the same Nazi administrators that just kept on going. And, you know, this point, while the Nazi spirit underground, I mean, clearly they're not necessarily trying to resurrect a specific Nazi party that's got the name Nazi and ticks every single box of the categories of National Socialist. But that broader aim of resurrecting German dominance, establishing Germany as a major military power, dominating Europe, becoming then the world's number one power, putting Germany on that path, militarily going into other countries, all of that they've been working on. And this comes across like so much of Mr. Flowey's Middle East coverage as well. Like this point that Germany is working towards a strategic goal, just like you were saying, that it's not haphazard, and that when Germany says we don't want to get involved in Libya, but we will work with Turkey and we will send a ship to a Red Sea, but we're not doing this here. This is not kind of the random week by week churn of politics and okay, they're having a bad week, or they don't really want, like, that just it wasn't politically favorable to Libya. There are very deep strategic decisions guiding all of that. So you see the beast coming up from the underground in that. But then in all of these articles that we've talked about so far, Mr. Flowey also highlights this one missing ingredient that would rapidly transform Germany from the socially divided, economically kind of listless and rudderless power that it is right now, that has a lot of these core ingredients and has a lot of potential, but has some struggle in turning that potential around. And that is a strong leader. And he focuses on how quickly all of these different parts of components of power could come together to form this really dominant nation if Germany has the right leader in power. And really from start to finish, on the European coverage, the rise of a strong leader has probably been the biggest focus for Mr. Flowey's articles this year. I mean, I personally, when I put all my 150-odd pages of Mr. Flowey's articles together, I didn't count the January 2024 issue because so much of that is written in 2023, but the February one, I think we're starting right out with looking at a strong German leader is imminent, and then you get to the January issue of 2025, And that's the cover there as well, that we're watching for the rise of a strong leader.
Yeah, and here's one article that explains why exactly we are doing that. And he goes, scan back to Mr. Armstrong. It's the article, This May Be By God's Designing, and talks about Mr. Armstrong's involvement with some key German and European leaders. But in that article, he says, this forecast is going back some 100 years now, with Mr. Armstrong's first plain truth issue talking about the rise of a strong German leader. And why did Mr. Armstrong talk about that? Because there are dozens of key Bible prophecies that talk about a strong leader right in connection with the return of the Messiah in the Old Testament, Jesus Christ in the New Testament. So there are prophecies after prophecies in the Old and New Testament that tie this prophecy of a rising strong man in Europe with the return of Jesus Christ. So it's one of the most exciting and exhilarating prophecy. It dates the prophecy. It definitely has not been fulfilled because Christ hasn't been returned. And if you look how much emphasis the Bible is putting on that prophecy to repeat it again and again, well, it makes sense that Mr. Flewy is hitting that prophecy more than almost any other prophecy. And the leader Mr. Armstrong was watching was Franz Josef Strauss, which he actually met with in America, along with another leader, Otto von Habsburg, who was in the European Parliament. And both of those leaders have had a big role on uniting Germany and Europe. Mr. Franz Josef Strauss, he died in 1988, and next year the Berlin Wall fell. So he wasn't the man that ended up leading a united Germany, but through this man, he was a key figure in the CSU, the Christian Social Union, and that traces back to Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg today. And that other leader, Otto von Habsburg, goes back centuries for the Habsburg dynasty, and Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg descends from that dynasty. So through those two men, we kind of have an idea who could be the Daniel 8 man. One of the key prophecies is in Daniel 8 about this man who will fulfill those many prophecies that are leading to the return of Jesus Christ. So for more than like 15 years, we have been watching Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, and in almost every article of this year relating to Germany, Mr. Flewy refers again to Gutenberg, not as the man that will be certainly fulfilling that prophecy. Every human being can make their own decisions, but he definitely seems to be heading in that way. And he talks about various aspects of that man, like his desire for strong German military being one of them. And you have seen that even in 2007, when he was just a parliamentarian. From there on, it was always focused on, we need a German strong presence, not just to defend Germany, but to have a military presence even in Afghanistan and other regions. So we have this man that really traces back to Mr. Armstrong's forecast, that really could be fulfilling those dozens of prophecies. And that's what Mr. Flewy has been focusing on a lot this year.
I mean, one of his first articles this year on that subject was called Watch This Man Closely. Like, you know, he's being pretty bold and public as to who he thinks this he could be. Now, he does say, you're right, he does say somewhere that, you know, it's not certain. This is someone who says is likely. He says, I could be wrong, but I believe Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg is the man whose mind and life is being conditioned to rise as the strong man of Europe. And so he's been pretty bold and direct on saying, yeah, I think this is the guy. I think his photograph comes up quite a lot in those different articles. His approach to Syria is something that he brings up a lot, and that zu Gutenberg wanted Germany to go into Syria much, much earlier. And now more recently, we've been focusing on, well, Germany's involvement in the fall of Assad. And then another thing is him and Donald Trump. And actually, I thought it was just interesting, even there were several articles earlier in the year that talked about how much a Donald Trump presidency would impact Europe. Mr. Frey brings that up a few times and again ties that into some quotes from Mr. Armstrong, where he talks about, well, both fear of Russia and a dislike of the United States and a reluctance to be dependent on the United States would prompt some massive transformations in Europe. And you see that same dynamic now where they really don't like Donald Trump and they fear Russia and they're making these changes. But it was one of those early articles on zu Gutenberg, Watch This Man Closely, where that's one of the big things that Mr. Flurry focuses on there, where he talks about all of these different things he said about Donald Trump, calling him a maniac, a ruthless tyrant, a violent madman, saying Trump is no friend of the Germans, calling him likely the greatest scumbag we've ever had in US politics. Well, they're noting that how similar that just unhinged reaction is to the unhinged reaction you get to Donald Trump from the radical left in America, and that strong kind of emotional outburst where it's almost hard to kind of articulate what it is exactly that outrages them so much. But there is that massive sense of outrage.
Yeah, and that's some key thing that Mr. Flew focused on throughout his year, was comparing him to the former president Barack Obama, who was really leading the charge of stirring much opposition to Donald Trump in America. And he compared him with other things too. Obama has been very much behind censorship, which is another article that Mr. Flew has written this year, was the EU's war against Elon Musk or against free speech. And that's something that the radical left, Obama and Gutenberg, have in common. The hatred of Donald Trump was another, and also the stance against Benjamin Netanyahu. Now with Barack Obama, this is a bit more obvious. He hosts like leaders that are very much in opposition to Benjamin Netanyahu. Gutenberg is more subtle, where he just calls like the government he's leading is far right, and the Palestinians, they have a point too, and things like that. But you see the same connection there. And something that distinguishes them, however, that Mr. Flew has been pointing out too, is Gutenberg's connection to the Catholic Church. And he had a long section about that in one of his articles, where he talks about this is something that we have been expecting also from the prophecy in Revelation 17 that talks about the resurrection of a Holy Roman Empire, which has historically been always the church and the state combining. And that's a key prophecy that we're still expecting, along with the rise of the strong leader, we're expecting the involvement of the Catholic Church. So now that you are seeing that a man that we are watching, that strong man, interacting more and more with the Catholic Church. He had a documentary about the church. He has been interviewed by Catholic magazines, and he has been talking about it more and more on his podcast. So you're seeing that coming together more and more to fulfill these prophecies, which is another key sign that this might be the man that will be fulfilling that prophecy.
And a theme that's come across as I've done these programs, I tend to do a program like this every year or most years at about this time. Often one of the big things that comes across going back over Mr. Flurry's articles is the spiritual dimension behind world events. And that, you know, I think, you know, in general, all of our trumpet print articles, we bring that into it. But that's just such a clear focus from Mr. Flurry's, and they expose the spiritual reality that you need to understand world events. And I think there are things that just you can't even make logical sense of and reason out without seeing that spiritual dimension. And he does spend quite a bit of time in some of these articles getting pretty direct in spelling out the spiritual dimension between what is happening. And these scriptures that talk about this Daniel 8 man having a mind change, his thinking fundamentally changing, but then so many of these prophecies in Daniel chapter 8 and elsewhere that talk about this strong man also shows that he's subject to an evil spiritual influence, that he is influenced by and then at some point possessed by Satan the devil. And if you want to understand the level of hate and destruction that this man has, you need to understand that spiritual dimension. And as Mr. Flurry explains in some of these articles and then gets into much more in his book, America Under Attack, you know, there's a spiritual dimension there in American politics. And there's that spirit. Like, why do you have American leaders doing things that are so obviously self-destructive and tearing down their own nation? That's from this evil spiritual influence. That is from Satan the devil that is ultimately trying to bring down Israel and blot out what God is doing in world events. And he writes here in one of these articles, the bigger threat to America is going to come from abroad. Satan will pass on to another leader to prepare him to destroy mightily. Just look at the damage Barack Obama has done to America, and you realize how concerned you should be about what the devil will inspire this European strongman to do. that was a key part of what he was talking about at the start of the year. And then it's a key part of that January article as well. You know, after Trump's election, watch Germany. And that is that dynamic, that shift is what we're seeing before our eyes.
Yeah, and we actually have a clip from Mr. Fluis on the Key of David where he talked about how the one event would be triggering the other. We could play that one.
The collapse of Germany's government will lead to a dramatic change. Dramatic change for Germany and Europe and the whole world. There's going to be a strong leader that comes on the scene to lead this European Union, which will become the Holy Roman Empire with 10 kings, and he will rule over all of them. That is the Bible prophecy that we need to understand. And I think that could happen in just weeks, certainly in a few months.
Also in that Key of David, he talks about Trump's inauguration or Trump coming back to power may actually trigger Gutenberg to say, now is the time that I have to get back involved, because otherwise Europe is going to lose out. Donald Trump is threatening with tariffs, with a much stronger American economy. And if Germany, if Europe doesn't have a strong leader, it might set back Europe for a long time before they can economically again compete on such a level. So seeing a potential leaderless Europe may cause him to quickly act and get into office. So that's a very interesting prediction that Mr. Fourier has been making right at that just a few weeks ago on that Key of David.
And talking about leaderless Europe, another article that he had this year that ties in very much to this rise of the strongman is Nazism Rises Again in Germany. And this focuses largely on the rise of the Alternative for Deutschland, as well as these other extreme parties across Europe. He talks about the Alternative for Deutschland in another article, an earlier one as well. And I think he's not really talked too much about that political party until this year. And right now, as we speak, they're very much in the news because Elon Musk has been boosting the profile of this party. Elon Musk has been doing a lot to try and say they're not Nazis, that these accusations against them are unjust. And I think there's a mixture of truth and error in what he's saying. There's truth in that anybody that opposes migration within Germany and within Europe will often unjustly be portrayed as a Nazi. However, you look at who this AfD party is and the way that they are literally trying to revive the reputation of the Nazis and saying, well, we need to be proud of what the Nazis did. We need to be proud of what our soldiers did in two world wars. I think, you know, like, this is remarkable. Like, Marine Le Pen's group and other European groups that get called the far right are saying, like, we don't want to do business. We don't want to work with the AfD. While Elon Musk and others are kind of supporting them, I think that that in itself shows it's not just a mainstream media kind of unjustly tarnishing the AfD. But anyway, Mr. Fleury talked about the rise of this party as well, how popular they're becoming. And he says the rise of this extreme party is just one sign of a German society in trouble. And I think, you know, his focus isn't really on this party taking over, but it's this party as a symptom of Germans willing to re-embrace that World War II era militarism, because that is really what the AfD, the current AfD, stand for. But then also with this society in trouble like this, the need for a strong leader, the need for the Catholic Church to even sort society out. And it's a symptom of a broader political disease.
Yes, and the AfD, as you said, won't likely be the party that's leading Germany. But one thing they do is they change the political discourse, where it's much more strong, much harder rhetoric, and much more hatred. Especially, lots of Germany is in a crisis, and it's obvious, but hatred obviously is not the solution. And I actually read some articles from Mr. Fluid that he wrote in the 1990s about similar far-right parties, and he said they are going to shift the course of discussion in Germany where like the mainstream parties are going to take on those talking points. And that's very much what we're seeing in Germany. And there's some legitimate concerns, as you already pointed out, but that hate, but if you look at the rallies that the AfD is having, there's just a lot of frustration and hatred. And then if you look at some of those fringes in that party, they're saying, why are we in that crisis? Well, we are subordinate to America, or we have been forced to break our alliance with Russia. That's why we don't have cheap Russian gas anymore. They are just blaming different fractions on their problems, and that's just stoking hatred. Another big talking point is we are living under the shame of history, and if we just break away from that shame, everything is going to be better. Now, those are some very, very dangerous solutions that are being proposed, and that's something that outside people just don't see because they don't have the prophetic understanding of where something like that will be leading. Just that the whole society is moved into a way where they're saying, like, we have to do something, we have to do it quickly, and we have the right to be angry about those things.
And I think that brings us to an article that I think we're going to be quoting a lot in 2025. And that is the EU's war on free speech, where he talked about the attack that EU regulators have made on Twitter or X, the attacks they've made on Elon Musk, and their attempts to clamp down on so-called disinformation. And he says, you know, this is not about disinformation. He says, this is a war against free speech. It is leading to a dangerous dictatorial dystopia. And I think there's signs already that we will see that become a reality this year. I mean, this is a massive talking point. We saw an election cancelled in Romania, and this was the reason. Like, online disinformation and online interference through social media. I think even the jury's out at this point whether there's an iota of truth in that. At first, it looked like there was, and that there was some truth there, that Russia had been using TikTok and some of these online tools to influence Romania's election. Now, I'm not saying that justifies cancelling the election, but that there was something genuine going on. Now it looks like maybe there wasn't, and maybe it was just actually it was dirty tricks from a mainstream political party, kind of doing what Hillary Clinton tried to do in 2016, and they canceled the election because of it. And they said, this vote that you've already done, it doesn't count. And, you know, is this going to lay the groundwork for more things like that in 2025? You look at the EU election, you look at what people are already saying about Elon Musk's talk about the AfD, the way that major party leaders are saying this is election interference, this is the US interfering in our elections, and it's unacceptable. And just today or yesterday, Scholz, I think, was giving a speech and saying we're not going to allow social media to influence our elections. Like, okay, yeah, I don't agree with Elon Musk about the AfD, and I think he's dead wrong on that. But you could definitely see that now being used as a way to, well, we need to crack down on free speech. We need to control what people can say online. And then maybe, well, we need to redo the election potentially, or we need to do away with this aspect of democracy or this specific democratic result that we don't like because of misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah, and what stands out from Mr. Fleury's article is, who is the one defining disinformation? Because it's okay to ban disinformation, like, we don't want to be fed lies. I would love to have a newspaper that just speaks the truth, for example. If you can get rid of all the disinformation, that would be awesome. But who are the men that are going to say this is right and that is wrong? And he goes back to some key individuals again. One person in America that has been doing that a great job in America, and who decided what's right and what's wrong, that was Barack Obama. And for a long time, you couldn't find anything positive in the mainstream and on social media about his political opponent, Donald Trump. Not until Elon Musk came around and invested $44 billion in buying Twitter, changing its name to X, and allowing someone to say something positive on Donald Trump, actually reinstating the former president that has now been re-elected president on his platform. Can you imagine banning a president while he was in office from a social media platform because you are hating him? and then you saw that the people still voted for him? Is that because he was spewing out disinformation, or was the other side just saying he is lying, so, and banning him?
I mean, Hunter Biden's laptop, another classic example. I mean, that was, you look at polls and Democrats, enough Democrats said, I would have voted the other way in this election if I'd have known the truth about Hunter Biden's laptop, to be pretty confident that that alone changed the 2020 election. Like, there's a case of misinformation elections, experts themselves shifting an election by getting social media to clamp down on that story and by lying about that story. So, yeah, and how we see that then play out in Europe and the role that plays out in the rise of a strongman, I think that's going to be, that's going to be important to watch. And again, Mr. Flurry brings in the spiritual dimension, and he gets back to Daniel chapter 8, this same chapter that talks about a rise of a strong leader. And one of the hallmarks of this strong leader is that he casts down the truth to the ground. And he says, it will brand truth as disinformation and exalt lies. I think this is a prophecy to watch in 2025 and to see how this happens. I'll have to go back over. One of the things he talks about is the European Media Observatory, where, you know, they publish, this is what we count as disinformation. Like, they'll publish examples of it. So at this stage, they're not banning it, but it shows you what the EU leaders count as disinformation. And it was people complaining about electric vehicles and saying that they're not environmentally friendly or that their range is too short. It was people complaining about migration, saying we got too much migration to our country. You're complaining about the European Union, like, just even opinion statements. They say, no, that's disinformation. Or talking about postal votes. I think that got banned. Talking, like, if you said that postal votes were unreliable, they said that was misinformation. So, you know, this ties right in with Bible prophecy. And I think another modern technology and major talking point that then Mr. Larry brings in a fascinating spiritual dimension for is artificial intelligence. And this has been a massive talking point in 2024. You can find a bajillion articles on it. Mr. Flurry brings in the spiritual dimension and talks about it in a European context that you don't usually see.
Yeah, and we have a clip here of something that really caught Mr. Flurry's attention. That was a 60-minute interview with the CEO of Google. We can play that one to introduce it.
There is an aspect of this which we call, all of us in the field, call it as a black box. You know, you don't fully understand. And you can't quite tell why it said this or why it got wrong. We have some ideas, and our ability to understand this gets better over time. But that's where the state of the art is.
You don't fully understand how it works, and yet you've turned it loose on society?
Yeah, let me put it this way. I don't think we fully understand how a human mind works either.
So here's the CEO of Google who admits that there's something about artificial intelligence that's different than other technology he has ever come across to. And that sparked Mr. Flurry's thought about a key prophecy in Daniel 8, and we can play that clip of that key of David as well.
Now notice Daniel 8 and verse 23. Here's what it says. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. Well, dark sentences, understanding dark sentences? Well, isn't that what AI is all about? If you look at the negative side of it, well, it certainly is. But it's going to stand up.
So here is something that you will never find anywhere else. And that's a prophecy that Mr. Flurry has been drawing attention to for many decades. But now he's connecting it to something that we are seeing just recently that has dominated the news, but few are aware of what that technology can actually do. And in his article, he chose some of the dark sides of artificial intelligence. And now there are some articles that talk about that as well, but obviously they don't have the prophetic context. And again, they don't have the understanding that there will be one man who will be able to control what almost no one else is able to understand. And again, he draws attention to Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg, who has been studying artificial intelligence for maybe a decade or more. The first time I heard artificial intelligence was from his mouth, and that actually got me interested into studying it because Mr. Flurry has been pointing to Guttenberg. But he has been investing in it. He has been working with companies that are investing in it, and he has been interested in the military aspects of artificial intelligence. And when you think about the military ramifications, we are only seeing the start of what is possible. Another fun thing is the European Union is very much interested in artificial intelligence and regulating it. And Mr. Flewy talks also about the danger of the regulating aspect of it, that you have to watch out for those people, because there is a danger of America, who is investing in artificial intelligence, being surprised by NASA power. He quotes the CEO of Palantir, who was working with artificial intelligence in Ukraine, and he's saying AI can be the turning point of where a David can beat a Goliath if that David wins the race in artificial intelligence. So if America, who is investing in military applications in artificial intelligence, is relying on AI to do a lot of those processes, but then another power who is very much a partner of America, which is Germany, is able to crack the code, able to have a cyber attack, able to then send a military attack, then it's a game changer. And there's another key prophecy that Mr. Flewy has been highlighting, and he talks about in that article or another article on that subject, Ezekiel 7 verse 14, where it says, "They've sounded the trumpet, everyone expects the nation to go to war, but they are not going to war." And he talks about that in the cyber attack context, and now with the added layer of that being amplified by the reliance on artificial intelligence and then the offensive use of artificial intelligence. So there's a key prophecy that he highlights here that's very specific about the American military being overthrown by a power that he would not expect because it's a partner.
And he also brings in artificial intelligence kind of into this context of elections and misinformation that we were just talking about. And you know, we've all seen the artificial intelligence pictures and the way that they've gotten better and better at lying, essentially. Or, I mean, it's not always done for deceitful reasons. Sometimes it's parody. You know, sometimes people will use it to make funny videos, funny memes. Everyone knows that it's artificial intelligence, and yeah, it can be amusing. But it can be used to fake things that people have that will and can deceive people. And you look at the potential for that to be utilized in elections. And you know, Mr. Flewy in that article was talking about the upcoming US election and the potential for it to be used then. But you know, that would apply to European elections. I think he brings that dimension a little in some of those other articles, that this is a technology that can warp people's perceptions of reality. And so that makes it very powerful. And so, again, I think it'll be interesting to see how that angle of it as well. There's the military, that's something we're seeing a lot in Ukraine, and with drones that can react in larger numbers and more quickly than humans individually controlling them could, and that kind of thing. But then some of this image generation and things like that, and how that ties in with, say, fake news. And then it's also another excuse to come in and regulate news media and regulate Twitter. And well, we've got to counteract deep fakes and things like that. So that's another aspect to it. I think a final subject that we got some beefy articles this year for Mr. Flewy on is France. And this is, I think we kind of even opened the show, our very first episode on France at the US Olympics. We went through, or we talked quite a bit about one of these articles, that Germany is the dominant power in Europe, but in a lot of ways, France is empowering Germany and is actively helping and encouraging this German-led Europe to break away from the United States. They're making an important contribution there, and a contribution that ultimately they're going to regret.
Yeah, we will see a lot of more of that in the very near future, but there have already been a few projects in the arms industry where they have had military projects together, like tank production, jet productions, and they have been recently, also now Macron talks about sharing the nuclear umbrella, and that's a big issue in the era of Donald Trump, where they're saying, can we trust this man to protect us with the NATO nuclear umbrella? So the Munich Security Conference head now says that's a debate that we have to be discussing in February. And if France offers again, Germany should accept that nuclear umbrella to be extended over the European Union or over whatever agreement exactly they are going to make. So Mr. Fluey has talked about France empowering Germany, but this year he talked about something specifically where he says that France itself doesn't exactly know Germany's intentions, and that he brought out in the conflict over Ukraine, which is a brutal butchery where Russia is invading and the Ukrainians are fighting back. Different countries are putting military funds in there that are essentially just prolonging that conflict, but it's not coming to an end. And over the course of this year, Macron was trying to see how can we empower Ukraine in a way that actually will make a difference, that will actually drive Russia back. And one of the things was talked about the missiles that Britain and France has been sending, but Germany hasn't been sending its Taurus missile, which is like a guided missile that can be really destroy some more stronger fortifications, some stronger military equipment. But Germany has been reluctant to send that. And then he said the same that said never tanks, never jets, nor are saying never missiles. And in the beginning they said we only send helmets and sleeping bags, which is a direct jab at Germany, which in the beginning when Russia was amassing troops around Ukraine, Germany literally said, well, we're going to send them sleeping bags and helmets, which was then leading to the resignation of the defense minister at the time. But he just can't understand how, yes, Germany is delivering weapons, but they're delaying it all the time. They are giving funds, but it's not helping Ukraine. And then if France tries to do something, they are kind of kneecapping him. And he just boggles with that understanding. But still at the same time, he says France is fully supporting Germany. He goes off front of the Bundestag and says, if Germany and France work together, we can do everything. If we don't work together, there's nothing going to happen. So he has that extreme love for Germany, says he wants to share the nuclear weapons, says he wants to have a true European army. But at the same time, he doesn't really understand what Germany is doing.
And again, Mr. Fluey brings in the spiritual dimension to this, and even the spiritual dimension in the relationship between Britain, America, and France. And you know, Herbert W. Armstrong showed this in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, where Britain and America are descended from Joseph, one of Jacob's sons, and France is descended from Reuben, one of Jacob's sons. And he kind of goes back even through the history about how those brothers betrayed Joseph, turned against him. Reuben wasn't really on board with this. He didn't want to go kind of fully into the betrayal, but he lacked the courage of his convictions to kind of stand up and say stop. He tried to work his way around this, and it didn't work out. Israel was sold into slavery. By the time Reuben realized what was going on, it was too late. He was bitterly sorry, but it was too late. He didn't stand up when he could have made a difference. And Mr. Fluey writes in this, there will come a point when Germany goes into full attack mode against America and Britain. Many prophecies reveal this. At that point, France will think, what have we gotten ourselves into? But by then, it will be too late. Once they see the beast power they have empowered and recognize what utter devastation they have helped cause, the French people, like Reuben anciently, will be utterly shocked. Biblical prophecy illuminates the true significance of events unfolding in Europe today. Only with that understanding can you grasp what you are seeing and know the stunning conclusion to which they are leading. So, I mean, that biblical history is prophecy, and it explains the dynamics we see today.
Yeah, and it goes back again to Mr. Armstrong, who wrote the United States and Britain and Prophecy, where he also talks about France and Germany. And he says that's the key to understanding Bible prophecy. It's the key, which is a third of the Bible. And 90% of those prophecies are for the end time. And now we are seeing more details than we have ever seen before about that betrayal. Like, the story of Reuben is so specific on how he was there in charge. He was the strongest, the firstborn. He was had the responsibility. France today has a responsibility in the European Union to ensure that World War II, another war, is not repeating itself. So there are other nations that are also empowering Germany, but he makes the point in that article, Minister Fleury does, is that France again has the responsibility. If France does not empower Germany, it would not happen. France has the opportunity today by saying no to that militarization, but Macron instead has said that they need a European army even to defend against the United States, which is a quote we go often back to, which Mr. Fleury has highlighted. And then another aspect of that prophecy is that Germany and Russia are working together to empower a European combine, which is what France is not understanding, because it's just hard to comprehend that history would be repeating itself, but the facts are showing that.
Well, I think that takes us through all of Mr. Fleury's coverage of Europe this week. Thank you so much for joining me, Joshua. We sat down. This was meant to be a 15-minute segment on a larger show. I think this is the show. I don't want to chop out three quarters of what we've just said to try and make that fit. I think it's been a great discussion to go over those in that level of detail. But when I was initially planning this out, I did want to have a section where I went through some of the other articles that we've had from Mr. Fleury, some of the living articles from Mr. Fleury, or the, well, okay, what do you do articles from Mr. Fleury? And I think I could see that being expanded, being half a show or a whole show in the future, because there's a lot that Mr. Fleury has said over the last year as well, that, okay, well, you know, these, we've had these Bible prophecies, but seeing fulfilled prophecy like we talked about in the first half, and these events that are yet to come, they put an obligation on you to respond to that. And also, they give us practical things that we can do in our lives. They help us in practical ways. So I'll go over that in the future, as well as we'll look at some of the most important coverage that we've had from several other regions. But I'll conclude with just one quote from one of these other articles. This is from As Crises Intensify, Fix Your Mind on This Hope. And Mr. Fleury says, as the days grow darker, we need this prophetic vision to fill us with light. One third of your Bible is prophecy. That prophecy tells you so much of what we need to know. The more you get into it, the more exciting it becomes. You begin to recognize that events in this world are pointing to a spiritual reality that is far more important than anything in this material world. It shatters your illusions and helps you see what truly matters in life. Look beyond the corruption and corruptibility of this world. I want to point you to a hopeful vision of a new government led by God. That encapsulates a lot more of what we'll get into in some of these subsequent programs as we look at our most important coverage from the Middle East, from the Americas, from these other articles. But unfortunately, that is all that we have time for today. So thank you so much, Joshua, for joining me. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. Thank you for joining us. And on future shows, we will get into more of that hope, more of that living, more of fulfilled prophecy going on, happening right now in the Middle East and in the United States. And until then, keep watching your world.